shoots, he scores!
So hello and welcome to the Leafs Nation podcast. With me once again is Danny Gray.
Hi.
And this time we have Ellen Etchingham from the Score's Backhand Shelf blog.
Hi.
How's it going, Ellen?
Pretty well.
Yeah, right on. So I was listening to the Backhand Shelf podcast a week or two ago now. Anyway, you were on, and you were saying that you came to hockey relatively late.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sure. Were you a fan a long time ago, or, you know, you just decided to start playing and become a fan just all of a sudden one day?
No. It was, I grew up in Chicago during the Bill Wirtz era, and the thing about Bill Wirtz is that he firmly believed that hockey should not be televised because it would kill gate receipts.
Right.
So the upshot of this is if you lived in Chicago, you would not see hockey. Like, unless you already kind of knew that the Hawks were there and went to their games, you wouldn't see it on TV, you wouldn't see it advertised. Like, it didn't exist, essentially. So it was kind of one of these things that, like, I'd heard of it, but I didn't really know anything about it.
That seems weird because it would be almost like trying to market lacrosse in Toronto without televising the games. Like, you're competing against the Cubs and the Bears and the White Sox and the Bulls, and it seems like that's the worst possible way to sell a product.
Well, it was a terrible, terrible strategy, and I can't really fathom why the NHL let him get away with it for so long. I mean, he'd been an owner forever, but nevertheless, he was killing the market in a great sports town. But the interesting thing is that once he died and Rocky Works took over, it's completely different now. They have the Hawks broadcast all kinds of stuff. There's ads for them all over TV. There's like billboards. It's like, he just turned it around, and, you know, my parents now, who never did anything with hockey when I was growing up, now they're huge fans, and, like, they
Games,
they buy jerseys and stuff. It's like,
So then how'd you wind up being a Habs fan?
Because I went to Montreal for graduate school,
and
that's where I saw my first hockey games, and, yeah.
All right, okay, so the decision to play stemmed from there.
Yeah. Yeah. I was a watcher before I ever attempted playing.
Fan bases of both of our teams have to contemplate at this point is how much their dignity is worth in relation to a first round draft pick. I mean, you know, my philosophy so far has been that, you know, if I'm not watching the game, I really hope they lose. If I'm watching the game, I just can't cheer for them to lose. I have to cheer for them to win. I don't know where you are with this tanking thing.
It's really hard because my boyfriend is an Oilers fan, and obviously, you know, what they've been through the last, you know, 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always sort of teased him about their tanking because I thought, yeah, I could never root for that. It seems so contrary to the principles of the game. You know, it's dishonest almost
yeah.
to want to lose. And yet, yeah, now there's part of me that thinks that it's like when the season has gone this horribly wrong, you know, holding out the first overall pick, it's like giving you this giant consolation prize. And it's like the only thing that can make you feel better about how awful everything has been is, you know, kind of getting this reward at the end.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I mean, it's totally different for us as fans to cheer for, you know, a lottery pick. You know, that it is for the teams to say, we're just, you know, not going to give this 100% for the rest of the season. But I will say that I'm happy to see a number of players get their, I don't know, sort of, I think for a lot of them it's a final shot at the NHL. Like, I think Gustafsson's going to get a lot of starts, and I guess I'd like to think, anyway, you know, that this could be it for him. It's like, all right, kid, show us what you can do. If it's not enough, like, you're done. Are there any players like that on the Habs?
This is an interesting thing that I've been looking at, actually, is I think that I suspect Randy Pennyworth of not really wanting to win all that much, just because of the coaching decisions he's been making are kind of, they don't make any sense from the standpoint of winning. They do make some sense from the standpoint of player development and possibly trying to push down the value of our upcoming RFA contracts.
that sounds so wrong, but you know what, I'm willing to accept that it might happen. But
how much longer is Cunningworth signed for? Is he just the rest of the season, or is he sort of got a multi-year deal? I don't remember how long they signed him for.
They officially, I mean, he was an assistant coach who was promoted to head coach when they fired Martin.
Right.
And they've officially announced him as an interim coach and say that they're going to do a full search in the off season.
Okay.
He would still be a candidate, and he's said that he wants to, you know, be renewed in the off season. But officially speaking, they're saying they're going to look for somebody else.
Man, I can't believe there was so much uproar over someone carrying an interim title.
Well, when they first gave him the job, they didn't say interim. They announced him as the head coach, and there was the huge kerfuffle. And then a couple days later, they backpedaled and came out with this announcement. They're like, no, interim coach, we're not, you know, we're not serious about this.
Maybe he's like trying to coach in French, and that's the problem. There's something getting lost in the translation there.
Well, I mean, just stuff he did with, you could say that PK Subban has some nonsense in his game, quote-unquote nonsense. Mm-hmm. But
we could use a stronger word there, but we'll refrain from doing so.
That's what Cunningworth called it, the nonsense in his game.
Okay.
But, you know, if you look at pretty much like any metric, he's been either the best or the second best defenseman the Canadiens have had all year.
Really?
And so when Cunningworth comes in, suddenly he's like, he healthy scratched him for a game. He benches him for like whole periods. He cuts his ice time. And it's like, you look at something like that, and that is not the decision that is going to win you games.
It might be down the road, it might give you a better PK Subban, but it's going to suck. Yeah, like you said, if he's your best player, he should be in the lineup.
Yeah. And well, and the other thing is, like, when they go into RFA negotiations with him this summer, you know, it gives them this evidence of like, well, no, because you were healthy scratched and we had to bench you and there were all these problems. You know, it drives down his value a little bit, I think, if you take that attitude towards him.
That's interesting, because some people have mentioned that the Leafs might be doing something similar with Cody Franzen, because he's an upcoming RFA as well. And he's a guy who's looked great on the blue line. He's got, you know, good underlying numbers. Not that anyone's looked amazing back there for the Leafs this year, but he's been one of their better and more sort of consistent blue liners. But yeah, when Carlisle came in, you know, he was a healthy scratch a couple of times in favor of either Komisarek or Luke Shen. And, you know, it's just seems, which is insane because he's a better defenseman than both of them. But that might be one of the reasons. And that surprises me because, I mean, I guess you have to use whatever leverage you can in signing these RFAs. But I would have to think that if the Leafs were really legitimately in the thick of a playoff hunt, they wouldn't be playing these kind of games, right? So is it just a matter of, because both of these teams are sort of in a similar standings position that they can afford to do this, that it makes more sense? Or are we reading too much into it? Or do you think, because we don't ever know really what goes on in an arbitration hearing, right? Like when the Thrashers walked away from MacArthur or whatever, all we knew is that, yeah, they just said, we're not going to offer him anything, you know, just give him what he wants and we'll walk away from it. So it'd be interesting to see what happens if they do mention those sort of things in the hearing.
Yeah. And I mean, there's stuff he's done with other players too. I mean, like Lars Eller has suddenly gone from being sort of sheltered and given more offensive opportunities to being put up against much tougher competition, like put in game states that he struggles in more than he was under Martin. Like, so, I mean, yeah, this is the kind of stuff where I'm saying I feel like there's a pattern of not using players in the way that you would if you were trying to sort of get the most out of them.
That's sort of something I was thinking of, though. Like, is there actually a pattern? I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a discernible shift. Okay, so we're going to promote a bunch of young players. We're just going to hand them the reins and see what they can do, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes you just see decisions that seem to be made by, like, flipping coins or something. And, you know, there isn't really an overarching, discernible pattern or plan. I don't know if I'm, I mean, you know, Carlisle hasn't been around very long. I don't know if I've got that from Cunningworth.
Well, I mean, yeah, there are people who say that, like, this is sort of my hypothesis, that he's not trying all that hard to win. There are people who think that somebody just said he's one of those, like, AHL-type coaches who just really likes guys with a lot of hustle and grit. And so he ends up giving a lot of time to, like, you know, fourth-line guys. Like, since Brad Staubitz got onto our team at the deadline, he's, you know, he plays him all the time. He plays him in overtime. He plays him on power plays. Like, you know. So it's either bad coaching to try to lose, or it's just bad coaching period.
Period. Yeah. He thinks he has some sort of like revolutionary system, and he's trying it out on the second biggest hockey stage, right?
Based on grit and toughness. I don't. Well, I mean, either way, like in either scenario, if that's what the Habs coaching is, I'm happy. So.
Yeah, that as Leafs fans looking in, that's great if he wants to do that. That would be great for us to see sort of that collapse there.
Yeah, now, have you been watching, well, probably not too closely, but have you seen much of the Leafs lately?
I follow the Leafs just because I live in Toronto now and they're everywhere in the media and I know a lot of Leafs fans. I haven't seen a full game of theirs except for the ones against the Canadiens recently.
Okay. All right. Well, then, Danimal, maybe you want to touch on how you think Carlisle's been doing?
I think it's been interesting, yeah, to see the sort of shift. Shots per game are definitely down, so he's got them playing a more defensive system. Gustafsson, surprisingly, has looked great under Carlisle. He hasn't been getting the wins, but his goals against was like... Under three, and his save percentage was at like 922 or something. Obviously, it's a smaller sample size, but I think he did look better. And so I don't know if that's just, you know, the confidence of having a new coach around or trying to impress him. But I think that defensively, the Leafs have looked much better since Carlisle took over. But the goal scoring's just stopped. I mean, obviously, losing Joffrey Leupold wasn't great. It was a bad sort of timing. Phil Kessel's slowed down. You know, the secondary scoring just isn't there right now. But I think that you give Carlisle a full season with this team, the goals against are going to come down, and the goals for are only going to come up. Like they're not going to keep scoring at such a low rate. Like they were scoring more than they should have in the earlier part of the season, but I think by late December, early January, and even early February, that was sort of their true rate of scoring, and they were still doing pretty well. You know, Kessel's still fourth in the league in goals and third or sixth overall in points or something like that. So I think the next year, as long as he keeps the goals against down, which I think he's doing, and I like the way he's using matchups. It's something that Ron Wilson didn't really admit to doing, but he's definitely been matching up Grabowski versus the other team's top lines.
Man, so you're pretty bullish on Carlisle. I'm not giving him that big a vote of confidence just yet. Yeah, he's brought goals against way down, and that's, you know, wonderful to see. But I don't know. The team's shooting percentage has been falling off the map, and I mean, you know, guys like Phil Kessel are more than due for some regression. But you know,
yeah, that's why I say I don't think the things that are going wrong are his fault necessarily. Just the same with Ron Wilson, really. I didn't think a lot of the things that were going wrong were Ron Wilson's fault, but you know, someone had to take the fall. But I think that. What Carlisle is doing well is something that can be repeated and sort of going forward. And I think it'll be a constant with this team. And the things that aren't going right now, I think will just kind of work themselves out, like you said, with a regression back to sort of a normal. Because I just think their shooting percentage is way too low to be sustainable.
Coach has been using players in a very different way. Is there anyone, Ellen, that you really want to see more of in the remaining, I don't know, we have 12 games or so?
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, the big ones would be Louis LeBlanc, who's sort of been up and down this season. And he's our first round pick from last year. And Blake Jeffrion, obviously, that we acquired from Nashville for Hal Gill. Those are kind of the two guys who I think are unknown quantities a bit. Like, and I think you want to get a sense before going into next season of sort of how good they are and what kind of role you can anticipate putting them in next year, because that helps you figure out what you want in terms of off-season moves. So I'd like to see more of them. I don't know if we'll get it because I mean Jeffrion was scratched last game. In favor, again, of, like, you know, Ryan White and Brad Staubitz and all of these.
Wonderful journeymen. All right, so be honest. I mean, how much of Jeffrion, you know, how much of wanting him to get more ice time is nostalgic?
It's definitely nostalgic. But there's an element where, you know, right now I've heard a lot about him being projected as a third liner or fourth liner. What I'm concerned about with the Canadiens going into next season is the kind of the second and third line parts of the team, the sort of gushy middle of the roster. To me, it's very interesting to find out whether Jeffrion is a fourth line guy in the sense of he can, you know, eat 5 minutes, 6 minutes a game and sort of at even strength and bang around, or if he could be a third line player who can be more, who can take on more of sort of a defensive forward shutdown role, you know? So yes, there's a nostalgia component, but for me, like, there actually is a question that I have about him that I'd like to see answered.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Danny, how about you? Who on the Leafs would you like to see more of before the close of the season?
I think it's great that we're getting a chance to see Carter Ashton. Obviously, you know, he was brought over at the deadline in exchange for Keith Ollie, and he was called up sort of pretty much right after. He's been getting some pretty good ice time, but I'd like to see what, again, same sort of difference. There's a couple of guys who obviously aren't coming back. You know, I don't think Joey Crabbe is going to be coming back. I think that, you know, Carter Ashton might slot into that spot, but yeah, if it's possible to call up even either Nazem Kadri or Joe Colborne. I think the Leafs only have one more call-up, actually. So yeah. I'm not sure who that they can bring in. But now with Kuhlman going down, I don't know if you can call up as an emergency. I'm not sure what.
Yeah, league allows emergency call-ups for the sake of injuries. And yes, Burke immediately burned two of our call-ups on Jake Gardner and, was it Matt Fratton? Because he wanted to give them the chance to play in the AHL playoffs, which said a lot about his hopes for making the playoffs. Shorten with artless horse thing, but Ursula, we've got to eat something. Knock, while still within the borders of the land that men has girded all double. Sort of returning to something you touched on, Ellen, you know, talking about how, you know, there could be sort of an element of nostalgia when, you know, you cheer for, well, I guess Jeffrion isn't exactly a hometown boy anymore, having grown up in the States, but, you know, we've all talked about that crazy Don Cherry rant where he went on and on about how Burke doesn't have any, you know, homegrown players, but how cool would it be to see a player who is actually, you know, Quebecois or from the Toronto area actually put their team on the backs, right? Like, that would be a pretty amazing story, I think we'd have to admit, right?
Yeah, well, definitely. I think that, especially, I think the Leafs and the Habs are maybe the only two teams in the NHL that sort of, they're not just teams, they're almost institutions, if that's sort of the right word to use. And I think that sort of gives them, it's just, they are different, you know, they both kind of are terrible right now. This is the first time since, or the second time since 1970 that they're both going to miss the playoffs. So it's different, and I don't think things in the NHL are the same when these two teams struggle. I think that if we ever saw a playoff series between the two of them, it would just be, you know, epic sort of ratings bonanza, and it would just be, you know, front story news, and I think it would be great. But yeah, I think that I disagree with a lot of things Don Cherry said, and objectively, I don't really care if the Leafs have any Canadian players or if they have any players from Ontario, but I do think that being that they are more than just a hockey team, I think that it would be great, yeah, if they had a guy like a John Tavares or a Steven Stamkos, or even, you know, I was saying to JP the other day, if Matt Sundin was born and raised in Toronto, I think the story, just for the sake of a story and a narrative, is just a better story. It just means a little more than, you know, that he's from Sweden. Again, it's not bad. You know, Saku Koivu was accepted in Montreal, but it's just, it's not the same. And so, yeah, I think that there's that difference there. Like, Don Cherry was obviously sort of off point, but I think he had, you know, a kernel of a good story in there, right? Like, these two teams are more than hockey teams, you know?
Yeah, I have to say that I would like to see Kadri make it on the Leafs, because I know a lot of people who are from Toronto who come from sort of like, you know, immigrant backgrounds or Muslim backgrounds. Their families came, you know, from other countries. Right. And I know there's a lot of, like, for that community, there's a lot of interest in him, in, you know, whether he, you know, if he makes the team and sort of, you know, becomes more prominent. So I do think there is an element where I think he particularly, for some people in Toronto, would be sort of uniquely special if he was on the team, because he sort of reaches an audience of Torontonians who are not historically, traditionally already huge hockey fans, you know?
Yeah, you know, actually, a lot of Leaf broadcasts have been sort of hammering that point home. They do these little segments in between periods, you know, saying, I think the title is something,
every,
you know.
Every nation is Leafs nation.
Yeah.
And they'll have a different immigrant background, like someone who grew up in Japan or someone whose parents had immigrated from Japan or wherever they go, right? Yeah, that's the sort of the thing. And I think that might be where sort of Toronto and Montreal differ, right? Like Toronto or Montreal has this longstanding, you know, Quebecois influence and that sort of thing. And Toronto really has never had that. They really have never had, like, you look back even the last 20 years, it's been guys like Matt Sundin, Borja Salming, Thomas Caberle, like not necessarily homegrown Canadian guys, but that's maybe part of Toronto because, like you say, is they have a, not that Montreal doesn't have a large immigrant community, but I think Toronto's is a bit more different and they sort of celebrate the multiculturalism in a different way. And I think the Leafs go out of their way to sort of celebrate that as well. So, yeah, maybe Kadri would be, even though he did grow up a Habs fan, it would be interesting to sort of a reflection of that because, yeah, like, you know, these Canadian or these immigrants have come to Canada and one of the ways they want to integrate into the society is to become hockey fans, right? Because that's something that is very universal sort of. So, yeah, I think that would be really interesting. And it would be cool to see how that sort of fan base grows or how they respond to him.
That was one thing I was thinking about. I mean, I posted a thing about Cherry's rant because, you know, I've defended the Canadians for wanting to have Quebecois players in the organization or Quebecois coaches or whatever. Like, I support that. And there's a lot of people who get upset at me for that. But I support Don Cherry's right to feel that way about wanting players from Ontario on the Leafs. The one thing I will say, though, is that since coming to Toronto, it astounds me how much of Toronto is not from Toronto. Like, not, and I mean, not just in terms of immigrants from other countries, but also just from people from the rest of Canada. Right. You know, like, I meet, I would say I've met less than a dozen people since I've been here who are actually, like, born and raised in this city. So I think that, you know, when you talk about, like, the identity of the place and the identity of the team, I think identity is more fluid in Toronto. I don't think people in Toronto are necessarily so deeply attached to this sense of, like, our place and our culture because the culture is in flux. The culture is now something that's taking in a huge amount of other cultures. So, you know, I think possibly a lot of Leafs fans don't care quite as much as Don Cherry does about this.
Right. No,
because
yeah.
They don't have the same sense. Their sense of regional identity is just different. It's not the same as regional identity in Montreal, you know?
Or even to a past generation, like sort of, yeah. You know, we were sort of growing up even, we both grew up in Southwestern Ontario and, you know, we were, the sort of the cliche was, you know, I always went back to sort of comparing Canada and America. It was, you know, America was the melting pot and Canada was the tossed salad of multiculturalism. And that's sort of been, it's like the worst analogy ever, but that's sort of been this, like you said, the identity of the area and the sort of what we're used to. It's not such a big issue, but I just think like if John Tavares was a Maple Leaf, that would be he's an awesome player, obviously. And it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't, and it shouldn't matter where they're from, but I think it just makes it better. And when you're talking about teams like the Habs or the Leafs, they mean more than just hockey franchises, especially to the community and to the people that follow them. And, you know, like my grandfather was a Leafs fan and sort of, we've both been like born and bred in that. And then there's not too, just because of the ages of the other franchises, there's not too many people who can say that, right? You know, they usually, like, even someone like yourself, you chose a franchise. It wasn't sort of like bequested to you, right? It was just a choice. And a lot of Leafs fans aren't like that because the team's been terrible for so long. If you're picking teams, you're not going to pick the team that hasn't won anything for 40 years.
In some ways, I feel very lucky that I ended up in Montreal because, I mean, to a certain extent, the fact that I'm a Habs fan is an accident of the fact that I was in Montreal when I discovered hockey. But there's also an element where, like, I do sort of feel like they're objectively superior to everyone else. It's a horrible thing to say. But, and I mean, not just the number of cups, but just, like, the richness and the complexity of the history and the cultural relationships that happen with that team are incredible. And it's a level of depth and intensity that's involved in the relationship between the culture and the city and the hockey team that I would concede that I think Toronto is the only other place that has anything approaching that in terms of, you know, this thing that just goes back forever.
Yeah.
Like right to the beginning and with this level of like ever building, you know, sort of passion and enthusiasm. I mean, there's American franchises that are old, but because it's the States and it's not the biggest game, it's, you know, a bit of a sort of low simmer.
Well, it's true. I mean, they just don't have the same mythologies surrounding their teams, right? With the Leafs, you know, there are just thousands of stories. You know, where did Bill Barilko's plane wind up? And, you know, what did, good grief, who was it? Buried something in Maple Leaf Gardens. They recently pulled out a time capsule. There's also some, like, weird little, you know, stories that are continually being sort of teased out of, you know, historical documents and stuff. And it's, I don't know, you're right. I would agree. It makes it sort of a richer fan experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just more sort of books and things to learn about, and then the Richard rites, and it's like that's a cultural event, or it's like a historical event. It's not just strictly related to hockey. It's so intertwined with, you know, the feelings of identity and nationalism and those sort of things.
Be still for a second while I try to pin your flowers on.
Subban and Price are both RFAs, right?
Yes.
Like, it's 100% that they're signing them and bringing them back. There's no chance that either of those guys gets moved, or what do you think? Do you think, is Gauthier the guy who's going to sort of, you know, not necessarily quote-unquote rebuild, but do you think he's the one to sort of remake the team?
I honestly do not have a lot of faith in him now. Before this season, I had some, but I don't know. I mean, just like the Camilleri trade was ridiculous.
Yeah. I was going to point that out as sort of a breaking point too. I just thought, what the heck are you thinking? Like, you know, it's clearly a move made in denial, you know, like, oh, all we need is a, I don't know, culture change or something. And, you know, it's clearly not the case.
No, it was just a horrible thing in so many ways. I mean, also that, like, trading somebody in during the second intermission, yeah, of a game you're losing, and you like trade away your one of your goal scorers or potential goal scorers anyway.
Just reeks of like reactionary and I don't know. Just
did you not want to trade him before the game? Was there something you saw like happening in the first period? Like, no, this was it. He didn't.
Well, the other thing is bringing in Rene Bork, who has, like, I haven't seen anything he's done that's impressed me at all. Like, I don't think there's any way you can argue that he brings anything that you couldn't have gotten from Camilleri, and more so. So, I don't understand the move in a lot of ways, but, you know, I didn't like getting rid of Andrei Kostitsyn either. Like, yeah, he'd been having a rough season, but rough season means a better chance of signing him to a fairly friendly UFA deal.
Well, you would make a shrewd negotiator, I think. All this talk about beating players down for a season, you know, for the sake of re-signing them to a cheaper deal.
It reminds me of that story that I think it was Garth Snow, where someone made either Garth Snow cry and someone made a player cry in their RFA negotiations when they were with the Islanders, and I just get the sense that you would probably do the same thing.
maybe. But I mean, I think, no, I don't think there's any way they get rid of Carey Price. I don't think there's any way they get rid of, like, I think Pacioretty is sort of going to be part of the core going forward. Subban's going to be part of the core. Eller, hopefully. They've got a group of young guys who you could do something with. And they've got, you know, they've got a lot of good pieces, but I think you're right. There isn't a cohesive sense of exactly how it's all going to pull together. And I think, yeah, because of the loss of Camilleri and Kostitsyn, there's especially, you know, I've got questions about depth going forward, because I feel like right now we've got like a first and a second line and then kind of six fourth liners. And I'm not clear what goes into the middle, you know?
Right. And both Gionta and Gomez are getting older as well, right? They're not going to be sort of part of your core going forward. You know, like, obviously Scott Gomez gets a lot of flack, and, you know, because he doesn't score any goals and he gets a lot of money, but, you know, he's a value. Like, I mean, Cam on the Leafs Nation has looked into Cam or into Gomez a lot. You know, he's much maligned and the guy's valuable, but I don't think you're going to get anything for those guys maybe if you ship them out. So how do you think Montreal goes about rebuilding, right? They haven't attracted, like, Camilleri really was the last, you know, big name UFA they attracted. So can attract someone this summer, or?
Well, I mean, they got Eric Cole.
He's turned out better than I thought, actually.
And he's worked out really well for them. What I would like to see them do is, again, if they had Camilleri and Kostitsyn, I think they'd be in pretty good shape. Without that, I mean, this is the sort of time I wish I had a GM who was more into advanced stats, because I think you need to look at the players who can fill in kind of a second, third line role. I think they especially need to find players who can sort of handle sort of defensive play and tough minutes, because they've been using Plekanec and Gionta in a very defensive role this year, but that's not the best use of those players, right? Like, they can do it, but you're sacrificing their offensive potential by making them take all the tough opposition, by making them start the defensive zone all the time. So I'd like to see them go after somebody who could take some of that defensive workload off of, yeah, Pukenitz and Gianta. And
did they play? Is that? I sort of had the impression that's how they used Travis Moen, but he's been injured for a while, hasn't he?
Or, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that doesn't help, like you said. But yeah, it's interesting because I kind of hate the Habs, but I don't really follow them. But it's interesting to sort of see where they're going because it's funny they have pieces that if the Leafs had those pieces, they would be much further ahead. Like I would pretty much offer anything on our roster for Carey Price. Like mm-hmm. I think he's one of the three best goalies in the NHL right now. He's also hilarious. Like the All-Star game basically sort of cinched it for me. Like I was always a fan of his, but then his personality and just sort of the way that he relates to the game was amazing. And I think that if he would be a Leaf, I'd buy his jersey. But yeah, and I think it would be great if they could get a guy like that. But I don't think there's any chance Montreal even listens to an offer, right?
It'd be insane to do that.
They're going to sign him to a pretty good deal, right? I mean, he's done. Yeah. They've got almost no leverage with him, right? What can you say? Like,
no.
They can't do anything. They have to sort of give him what he wants.
Right? Well, no, I don't know. Give Ellen a year with him, and she'll just, play him as a backup for a while, and
feed him cigarettes.
Take some compromising photos.
No, you'd have some sort of like cigarette related study where it's like you see goalies who smoke, their productivity goes down. With the multicolored mirrors on his hobnail boots, lying with his eyes while his hands are busy working overtime. A soap impression of his wife, which he... All right, so one last topic. Who are you cheering for in the playoffs?
In the playoffs. I don't know.
What are those?
Yeah.
All I could remember.
There was a... somebody said this on the Habs Eyes on the Prize podcast I was on, that they're cheering for Nashville because it's got the two Costitzins on them.
Right.
On it now. And...
And Hal Gill.
But the two Costitzins have the big Belarusian rivalry with Grabowski.
Right.
Like, they don't get along with each other, and they're, like, the only three hockey players from Belarus. So he was saying that he wants them to win the cup just so you could get the like Belarus party photos with the Costitzins going with the cup and Grabowski being all angry in the background.
Yeah, they'd probably rub it in his face pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. So I could get behind that.
You know, it's funny actually because I think I could get behind Nashville too. I don't know. They're just such a they're a team nobody pays any attention to. Or well, okay, let's be honest, not nobody, but not nearly as many people as either of our franchises. So it's nice to see, or it would be nice to see, a team that's had really good management and, strong ownership in the face of, sort of weak attendance or just general attention actually get rewarded. Mm-hmm. Because I think that would sort of, that would really open the door for them, right? Like, if suddenly they win a cup, man, like, they can fill seats more easily for years to come, despite being a smaller market. So that'd be a good story, I think.
Yeah, I like, it's hard for me to cheer for anyone in the East, but if I had to pick a team, I really like the makeup of the Rangers. And again, I like the original six and then sort of the history that goes along with it. And so I think that, and we don't really have much of a rivalry with them as well. And so I think that would be my team from the East that I'm okay with winning. And Henrik Lundqvist is a great goalie, so it's good to watch him. And they've sort of been close to as well, but not, since, 94, they really sort of won more than one or two playoff series. But in the West, I'm definitely cheering for St. Louis because I've liked them for the last few years. I like their lineup. I like guys like David Backes and
former Leafs,
Patrick Berglund. Yeah, and I really like Thomas Steen. Alex Steen. I mean, I'm sure I would have liked Thomas Steen if I was around for that. But I really like Alex Steen, so I really would like to see St. Louis succeed. And I think that would be a good story as well because they're a team that, went to the finals both of their first two seasons or something. And, they haven't been back since. And they've always had a really good team and a really competitive team, except for the last, maybe 5 or 10 years. But it would be really good to see, I think, and that would be exciting as well. And they're a smaller market sort of American team, I guess. Yeah, I can't cheer for any other Canadian team, so it's always got to be American teams that I have to cheer for now in the playoffs.
But see, what about Winnipeg if they could scratch their way in?
No. I just can't do it. I don't know. I just feel like there's nothing against the team per se, but I feel like the rest of Canada would just be so insufferable that I wouldn't be able to deal with it. Because I just know when the Leafs are successful again, or if they ever are, if they make it to the playoffs, there's no one else who's going to cheer for them. No one's going to suddenly say, oh, you got to cheer for the Leafs, they're Canadian. No, no one will say that. Everyone will say, you know, screw the Leafs, I hope they lose. And I just feel like I can't, you know, I know that's never going to be returned, so I can't in good conscience cheer for the cheer for the Jets.
That was the thing, is actually I was amazed at that last year. I mean, I was in Taiwan, but I was involved in the Hockey League in Taiwan with a bunch of these Canadian expats, and everyone hated Vancouver. Like, there was no sense of, like, you know, rooting for the Canadian team against Boston. It was everybody just wanted Vancouver to lose.
Absolutely.
As hard as possible.
So much so that, like, I mean, we have plenty of reason to hate Boston, but I was cheering for Boston.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Thomas Caulerly being there was a nice plus, I can't cheer for another Canadian team. It's just never going to happen. Maybe when I was a little kid or whatever, I was excited. Like, when the Flames went on their, you know, miracle run, that was fun, and even with the Oilers after the lockout. But I was never actually, like, you know, pulling for them in a way that I would have other teams, right? So, I don't know. I really can't do it. And the Habs run 2 years ago was... That was a lot of anxiety for me as well. If they would have made it to the finals or squeaked in, it just was, you know, worst case scenario possible. And I think the Leafs had traded their draft pick that year too, so it would have been like, I think that was the year that Seguin was drafted. So it would have just been a shitstorm of terribleness.
It would have been interesting to be in Montreal for that though, because I wonder if people in Quebec, if they'd had to choose, would have chosen Vancouver, just because, like, Boston is such an ancestral rival for the Habs.
That's true. Yeah, I think if
and Vancouver's really far away, so
I don't know. I mean,
I would only cheer for another Canadian team if they were playing the Habs. We'll say that. Like, if it was Vancouver and Montreal in the finals, yeah, I would have to cheer for Vancouver. Like, obviously, I'd cheer for the Meteor first, but then Vancouver probably would be a close second.
Mm-hmm.
But listen, Ellen, thanks for joining us. And yeah, hopefully we'll catch up. We'll see you again later.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Thanks. All right, take it easy.